Hello, I'm Dr. Amalia Gonyas-Malka. Welcome to Womanity, Woman in Unity, the show that celebrates prominent and ordinary African women's milestone achievements in their struggles for liberation, self-emancipation, human rights, democracy, racism, socioeconomic class division, and gender-based violence. Joining us today is Professor Shlengiwe Mkhize. She is the Deputy Minister of the Department of Telecommunications and Postal Services, and during the previous administrations, she has served as Deputy Minister of Correctional Services, the Deputy Minister of Economic Development Department, and the Deputy Minister of Higher Education and Training. She is the former Ambassador of South Africa to the Netherlands, and she is the former Commissioner of the Truth and Reconciliation Commission. Welcome to the show, Deputy Minister.
Thank you very much for having me.
Deputy Minister, can you please share with us how your new term in office is? Are there any specific milestones that you want to accomplish? And is greater representation of women in your ministry one of the priorities on the agenda?
Well, first of all, you know, when you get into a new sector like this one, the telecoms, what for me was exciting is just to look at possibilities in terms of what we can do to deal with the question of inequality, because one of the priorities is to focus to roll out the broadband to the most rural areas. And for me, it was like, that's where most of our women are. And those are the people who are excluded. And those are the people whose children do not have equal access, like children who are in a golden cities, in terms of quality of education and job opportunities. So the first feeling was, I'm at the right place. I will represent those whom I identified with strongly. And of course, you know, it was so funny. I was baptized with fire. On my arrival, I think towards the end of the month, then the women came together and they said, we've been trying to form a forum, Women in ICT Forum, and we think that now that you are here, we have to do it. And I said, go for it. And to my surprise, of course, it was a good initiative. But as we were moving closer towards the launch, they were talking about networking, supporting each other, and of course, I was thinking about the inclusive agenda to say, how do we get as many young women into this sector as possible? How do we use technologies to connect those who are not connected? So we went along. I supported the launch, but we have started talking in terms of saying, how do we broaden their mandate in such a way that it's not about themselves? It's important for them to create to have this supportive network, but really, I'm encouraging them to use this formation as a transformation hub for all what we are trying to do to roll out broadband to the most remote, poor areas, not for its own sake, so that those women could also acquire skills and be able to access services online, but also that they could be connected in terms of even cooperatives, small, medium entities.
It sounds like such an incredible initiative and so exciting to be able to make a lasting, sustainable, meaningful contribution.
Yeah, the department has a potential to turn around people's lives, because once they are connected, the things happen.
And for example, when you talk about the rollout of broadband to our rural communities, do you foresee by having this, it'll be a means for enabling women in these hard-to-reach remote areas to participate more in the South African economy?
Well, that's what we've been doing. You know, let me take the Big Five municipality in the area called Hlulhlwe. What we have done there, we're having ongoing dialogues with women who were villagers, but they are very good in Zulu dance and the attires. And we have been saying to them, you need a special application so that you become a tourist attraction. And they're not far from the Hlulhlwe Game Reserve, which attracts a number of tourists from all over the world. But there has been no vision to say when they get to Uhluhluwe Game Reserve, they know that just the other side of the fence, there are villagers who could entertain them. They could have dinner there under fire with music and dance.
To really give an authentic experience.
Yes, and those are some of the things we are doing.
And that's the magic of telecoms these days. It is that integrating factor which can link and connect and communicate with people from all over, not just from a local point of view, but globally, if we're talking aspects of tourism.
Yeah, and also it's the future. You know, this digital revolution, if you look at us in terms of our struggles when we were younger, we're told about the Pan-African Women Organization, PAWO, that all liberation movements, they came together and women formed themselves into PAWO to support the liberation struggles. But, we, you know, now that I'm in telecoms, I can see the common things that we could be talking about, creating platforms for us to pursue certain things instead of waiting for a conference.
We've got the opportunity for real-time engagement to get that momentum and move things forward. Deputy Minister, you were talking a little bit earlier about the fact that we were going through the struggle, revolution. And I know that in your youth, you worked tirelessly with universities locally and overseas for the release of Nelson Mandela. And you've also worked with women and children's rights within detainees support movement for the United Democratic Front. Can you tell us a little bit about your feelings and thoughts from those times?
I want a video of when the police came to the University of Zululand, because I remember I left everything. I ran away. All student leaders ran away. But I came back when it was quiet. It was only the police and students on the side. And I was so stupid. I walked. And I picked up my luggage. And they were singing and chanting. And then when I ultimately reached the edge of where the students were, they were the other side, the police were the other side. They started singing and doing this. So I said, I still want that video. I want to look at it. You know, my involvement in women's struggles, what I like with women is that they forge links across religious, political line to defend families, to defend education, to defend, you know, everyday issues that affect them on a daily basis. So I'm the convener or the chair of the Progressive Women's Movement. And the bottom line of the Progressive Women's Movement is that you don't touch any issue which is not going to unite you. Hence our priorities is to look at education, economic inclusion, women's rights as human rights, the UN, that special resolution 1325, which looks at all multilateral issues that affect women. And of course, peace is a big issue for us. So I like people who stand together for issues, because that's the future. It's not short term. It's something which will benefit the next generation.
And that moves me on to the next point that I want to ask you more about. You've been the convener of the Progressive Women's Movement of South Africa. And as such, you know how important it is about building female leadership through unity across not just the South African context, but also into our broader community in Africa. And as a woman who has constantly worked hard to succeed, how do you see female leadership in South Africa? And do you think that we've done enough to help women achieve gender equality across all sectors?
I think women in South Africa in particular have always struggled side by side with men. But when I look back, there's this notion where people will say, this issue is not about gender. And sometimes it delays us. I remember when we were involved in struggles for liberation, whenever you raised the gender issue, then men will say, you are dividing us. You are going to delay our liberation. And when I look back, there are gains which you could have made even then in terms of ensuring that there is a deeper understanding from all sides of equality between men and women. Because sometimes you can struggle together, and still men will think, in a patriarchal society, you mustn't assume that they think equality. They think you are there because something might be wrong with her, you know. Or maybe she's unhappy a bit at the moment. She hasn't got a boyfriend or something. They don't think equality automatically. So then each time you raise the gender equality issue, everybody will say, oh, no, you are delaying us. Here we're dismantling the apartheid system. That's a big issue. And so we lost time.
Because they're not mutually exclusive. You can do things at the same time. It's combating the issues.
Yeah, because also it undermines your gains if you talk freedom and there are people who, for some reasons, are not liberated. So we are where we are. We've gained 50%, and we still have quite a number of women who bring up their children who live under tribal authorities. They've made their gains. Some of them own property, piece of land, but some still have serious challenges. But I think the private sector is lagging behind. If you look at statistics that was produced by the Johannesburg Stock Exchange.
Well, there's one with Businesswoman South Africa.
Businesswoman in South Africa.
Woman on the JSE, and I think the last data was in 2012.
Yes.
Which indicates that we've only got 3.6% of CEOs on the JSE that are women.
Yeah. And you remember, women, if we assume that then we're 60% in the majority, and you're so low in terms of economic leadership and inclusion, it shows what I'm saying, that we've made good gains on paper, but in some real life experiences, there are still challenges.
You're very right. Mm. And in one of the Labour Department studies, I saw that 80% of our female workforce are in low-skilled, underpaying positions.
Yeah, but people will actually capture them. In terms of statistics, they would say, oh, 45% of our women, although this is an area where people must have critical skills, are women. When you break that down and analyze it, you'll find that they'll be in the admin side or HR, you know.
Making up the numbers.
Yes.
As opposed to providing meaningful contribution to take their businesses ahead.
Being at the driving seat of the corporate strategy. Because really, that's what matters. And also, that's where there are benefits.
Today, we're talking to Deputy Minister Makhizi from the Department of Telecommunications and Postal Services.
Hi, I'm Zonke Dikana, a South African Afro-soul musician, songwriter, and producer. You are listening to Womanity, Women in Unity on Channel Africa, the voice of the African Renaissance.
You're listening to Womanity, Woman in Unity on Channel Africa, the voice of the African Renaissance, on frequency 9625 kHz on the 31-meter band, also available on DSTV Channel 902. Today we're talking to the Deputy Minister of Telecommunications and Postal Services, Professor Shlengiwe Makhizi. We would love to receive your comments on Twitter at Womanity Talk. In our previous conversation, Deputy Minister Makhizi shared with us some of the insights into her new term in office, in particular the rollout of broadband across our rural communities to help better enable our women. We also reflected on some of her university days in terms of the struggle and moving forward and motivating that the struggle for apartheid, we could have made greater gains for women if we'd also looked at the gender equality issues then. But we have still made significant gains in our country, and we need to continue to strive for further gains. Now, continuing with our discussion, Deputy Minister Makhizi, you work in the telecommunications sector, and technology has transformed the 21st century's working world. We're in a digital revolution, which is opening up new career possibilities for women. And as I understand it, your department has adopted a gender and information communication technology strategy, which guides the implementation of gender empowerment programs. Can you tell us a little bit more about some of those programs and how you're encouraging women to take up opportunities in the information communication technology space?
Well, maybe just to take you back, I spoke about broadband rollout. It was in 2013, November, when Cabinet approved the policy framework, South Africa Connect. So this, you know, how the question was, how then do you ensure that the whole country is connected? One of the things we are prioritizing really is e-learning, because we realize that taking the end user devices to these communities cannot be enough. We start with the school, and what we do then, we ensure that teachers are trained how to use technology. And in that way, we promote innovation and technology.
And I think what you said is very important too, that it's about looking at the end user. Because for someone who hasn't been privileged to experience technology and what it can do, if you've suddenly given it, you actually don't know how to use it or apply it in the most efficient way. So by starting off at grassroots through our education system to instill that e-learning, it becomes a second way of thinking by thinking digital.
Yeah, and also, you know, we had fun experiences. We went to a few schools.
Can you tell us about them?
Yeah, we found that the infrastructure had been set in the school, the towers were there, the laboratory was connected, but computers were locked away because teachers feared that students will break them.
Oh, dear.
And so, hence now, we've been talking to companies, HP, Microsoft, Intel, all the big ones, saying to them, it's important to devote time running workshops with educators as part of professional development, so that when they have access to these gadgets, they use them in ways which will yield positive results.
It makes it so much more relevant. And one of the programs I understand you have is the Techno Girl program. Can you tell us a bit about that? I believe it promotes science, technology, engineering, and mathematics.
Yeah, the Techno Girls program targets younger women when they are doing their grade 8, 9, and say, you will take math, science, and technology. You'll have a home each time you're on holiday. One of the participating companies will place you, and over a period of 3 years up to grade 11, by then, the condition, how they sign you off, is that they would have helped you to identify a place where you can study post-matric, and they will get you a scholarship, and they will show you a career path when you come back where you can work. It could be in cables, it could be network, it could be in data, it could be data analysis, but you'll have a niche in the ICT sector.
That's fantastic. And so much support for 3 years.
Exactly. And so grade 12 is a year for preparing exams. A person is confident, is inspired, is motivated, and they know exactly which school, which university or institution of technology they are going to go to.
And whilst we're talking about women in the workplace, I came across recently a 2005 McKinsey Lean In study, which reported on women in the workplace in corporate America, and it indicates that female leadership is vital for organizations, and as we've spoken about, the diversity, the inclusion, the innovation that it brings. But yet, they said, based on the slow rate of progress over the last 3 years that this study has run, it will take 25 years to reach gender parity at senior vice president level, and more than 100 years in the C-suite. Women are still continuously being underrepresented across all levels of the organization and face barriers to advancement. Some of the findings indicate that women are more likely than men to think that, one, they'll have fewer opportunities to advance and progress because of their gender. Two, that being a woman will make it harder for them to advance in the future. And thirdly, they feel that they have personally missed out on opportunities purely for being a woman. What do you think about this?
Well, maybe they missed out on one aspect, that some men don't think about women. They think about the boys' club. You know, if you are in a club, it makes sense to talk to other boys and look at where you're going, how to grow the company, what next, how do we access new opportunities and so on. So it's really sometimes just accepting the status quo as the norm.
And
boys will be boys. They
recycling, recycling things, maintaining it
supporting
in with a network.
Supporting each other, working together, growing the company, doing all the right things. So I think it's important for all of us to begin to see the dangers of gender-neutral policies. Because if really, in terms of monitoring and evaluation and performance appraisals, there's no recognition for a male in terms of mentoring and growing the number of women in strategic positions within that division, so that man will not think about women because the policies of most companies are gender neutral. So it's up to, you know, South Africa is talking about charters. If you look at what the Department of Trade and Industry is doing, they keep on changing charters, talking about broad-based, mainly because some of these things, they need transformation hubs, they need champions, they need the drivers, people who will stand up on a daily basis. And it works better, especially if it's men with power, like CEOs and chairpersons of companies, will make it clear that in this company, you will consider your growth, your promotion, only if you are pushing the inclusive agenda. It's a hard call because men will claim women still need to learn the ropes. You know, there are always excuses and good reasons.
It's worked within political structures, and I always like to use the ANC as an example. Mm. It works. Having the 50-50, people are recognized not just because of their gender, but it's their capabilities. And this needs to transcend into the corporate and private sector space. Today we're talking to Professor Shlengiwe Mkhize, Deputy Minister of the Department of Telecommunications and Postal Services.
Hi, this is Lira, South African Afro-Soul singer and songwriter. You're listening to Womanity, Women in Unity, presented by Dr. Amalia Malka on Channel Africa, the voice of the African Renaissance, a program that celebrates prominent and ordinary African women's milestone achievements in their struggle for liberation, self-emancipation, human rights, and democracy.
You're listening to Womanity, Woman in Unity on Channel Africa, the voice of the African Renaissance on frequency 9625 kHz on the 31-meter band, also available on DSTV Channel 902. Today we're talking to the Deputy Minister of Telecommunications and Postal Services, Professor Shlengiwe Mkhize. We would love to receive your comments on Twitter at Womanity Talk. In the previous segment, we spoke about the digital revolution, how technology has transformed our 21st century and opened up a multitude of different opportunities to young women as well as to women in more of our rural areas, with the emphasis on some of the programs that the Department of Telecommunications and Postal Services is running, such as the Techno Girl program, which is a very sustainable project going across 3 years from when girls are starting from grade 8 through to grade 12 when they start their matric programs and to tie up with companies so that they've got their career paths mapped up. Deputy Minister, now turning to more of a personal perspective, one of the questions that I ask my guests on this program who have all made significant achievements in their various fields, whether it is in politics, business, the sporting arena, is about some of the factors that have contributed to their success. Some of them talk about hard work, others speak about perseverance. What, in your opinion, have been the key drivers to your success?
I think, for me, it's really taking myself very seriously. I remember my high school years at Morris Isaacson and university years. There was something in me which didn't just want to follow. And you know, sometimes as women, it's so important to be part of processes. And quite early in life, I wanted to emerge. You know, I was very cheeky about it. I don't know why, and I don't know where did it come from. I wanted my role to be clear in everything, because I just didn't like subtle forms of sexism. I didn't have the words. I didn't know that was sexism. I didn't want to beautify meetings because at that time everything was done through meeting, caucus, planning, talking, and men will always have roles for each other. You'll do this, you'll put this, you'll distribute these papers, you'll talk to so-and-so and so on. And then at the end, they'll say, okay, then are you going to come with me or you prefer to go with John?
So you got the leftovers.
Yeah, no, you accompany. You have to make a choice. Whom do you want to accompany?
To not be independent.
Yeah, no, I didn't like that. So quite early, I will be clear about what I wanted to do and I will do it. And so it's important, I think, for us as women at all times to define our roles and responsibilities and to execute them. So quite early, I started saying, you know, whatever I say, I must mean it. I saw differences in everything between myself and other people. So the question of values and principles to me became important. I said, I'm not going to talk to young people and say this and do things differently. And so an inclusive agenda became important, you know, quite early too, because then there were emerging, simmering divisions. There'll be those who were associated to other political parties and different religious groups. Some will be emphasizing this church and this. And I just didn't want anything that divided people. Hence, most movements I associated with were highly inclusive. And I enjoyed that. And somehow it made a lot of sense for me. And I didn't want anything which will divide women later as I became more mature and clearer about my feminist agenda. And so that has helped me a lot. Also, I think in the process, as I was maturing and beginning to be good, I still didn't want to be in competition with men. I wanted to maintain my femininity. Because we know people live with these stereotypes of who you are. There are women who have said to me, don't worry, sometimes some men will say, if you don't mind, if you make yourself a cup of tea, can you bring one for me? When the woman have not said she wants to make tea, but a man is smart in terms of asking for a cup of tea. And those women who are in charge of divisions, who are going to make a presentation, they say, I keep quiet, sometimes I make a cup of tea. When it's time for the company to make a presentation, I'm the one who's making it. And they get so embarrassed because they thought I was early, the boss was still coming. So, and then some women make mistakes. They change their values, they try hard, they act in a manly manner, and they lose out. You invite all the stereotypes if you do that. They will say, oh, she's really aggressive. She doesn't stop talking. Because you're trying to prove a point. No, I'm not all over. I talk when it's necessary, and I say what is important. I'm very strategic. I live by the strategy.
Well, it sounds as though your key elements have been about taking yourself seriously, which I think is important because you matter. And if you don't take yourself seriously, how is anybody else going to?
Yeah.
To have morals and principles, understand the roles and responsibilities, and to be focused and dedicated to your particular task at the time.
And I set clear goals for myself, realistic ones. I don't put pressure, not ambition, you know, to say, oh, I want to be this. No, in terms of my achievements, outcomes, I don't play around.
And when you were growing up, can you tell us what influenced you the most and take us through some of the pivotal moments?
Well, I think my family to a large extent, highly structured. When I look back, I think it was overstructured.
Discipline.
I don't... yeah, so everything was properly done. You know, when you say whatever I wanted to say, you had to process it a bit so it's not to be all over. So that helped me a lot. And of course, I must say, my mother, it's so funny. I wish I was like her. Very modest, but very strong inside. I don't know how did she manage to do that, because all of us, we tend to be all over a bit once we have achieved. No, she was the complete opposite, but everybody knew who was the anchor in the house and in the bigger family. So she was a very strong woman. And so she influenced me a lot. But at that time also, I think we were lucky, because also, you know, in a place like Soweto, there were all sorts of women. There are older women like Sally Motlan. I wish you can get her into this. She's in her 80s now. Who really sacrificed. They put in their resources. They will take us as young girls and take us to faraway places away from Soweto. Just a camp, Sunday afternoon. You'll go to a 7 o'clock service, and from there the cars are waiting for you. And some people dropped out. They didn't like that, because it was like literacy education about your values, your principles. You know, I always tell the daughter, Khumutso Motlana, who is an advocate, and say, I know your mom better than you. You were in a boarding school. She was camping with us every Sunday, inviting us to her house, talking to us. So I would say one had this mentoring, which was meant to be political, but by very strong women who knew who they were and how to mold other women. So I was lucky. Even things that were meant to develop me politically, they ended up developing me as a woman. With the Release Mandela campaign, when I got to the University of Illinois in Chicago, there was a lunch hour, what do they call it, the brown bag, where we all came with some food, and they those were feminist discussion about the university, education. I'm surprised in the resolutions, women's female students have not included what affects them, like violence on campus and stuff like that, and sometimes insensitive male professors and so on. So all the way, I must say, in my involvement in strategic struggle-related things, there were also just unintended mentoring in terms of me and other women as women, which it really helped a lot. It makes you to be comfortable and not to wait for a name to be called or something to be given, because there's always something important that you wake up, you see, and you pursue for the next.
It sounds though it's giving you the foundation and building self-confidence.
Very, very. But, you know, maybe because I'm a clinical psychologist, I watch the ego story very carefully, and I go all out to live closely to people at all levels. If I'm in a village, you'll think I'm a villager. When I sit down with them, they eat pap and meat and some greens. I might not eat meat, but I'll sit, I'll take a piece of pap, I'll be eating it. If I'm in a, you know, I fit in with people.
Connecting.
Yeah, yeah. I invest a lot in relationships, but I don't get swallowed, because sometimes women get so involved emotionally and come out with nothing.
They lose their identity in the process.
Yeah. At the end of the day, I know there's work to be done. There are achievements. I don't lose sight of outcomes in anything. Even in government, I can tell you and say, when I was in correctional service, that was my goal. In education, in economic development, even now. Because that's just me. Mm. It's not hard work. Now it just happens because it's the right thing to do. I focus all the time.
And through experience, I think it grows on you.
Yeah, I suppose with experience. And I invest a lot in other people. I don't go it alone. In the sector, maybe there are very few people I haven't met with. The private sector, you name it, practitioners, CEOs, I meet with them. I want to know what's your story. How can we share notes? How can we work together all the time?
And you get the multi-dimensional perspective as opposed to just the plain black and white you have to try to read between the lines. You get the contextual stuff.
Yeah, talking to them, it helps me sometimes to question even what could be my guiding point. And I adapt it, I improve on it, and it always works out.
Deputy Minister, we now coming, unfortunately, to the end of the show. During your career, no matter what position you've occupied, you have done tremendous work concerning women's development. In closing our conversation today, can you please use this platform and send a message of hope to all those women in Africa that due to circumstances, gender equality might not be first on their agenda, but rather the daily struggle of taking care of their children, making sure that there's food on the table is a more pressurizing reality?
You know, I think the starting point, and I've been saying this for all sorts of groups even here, even in the camps of Darfur, we know when I meet with the minister there, I always say the question of networks, support systems is a starting point, because if you walk alone, you can walk fast, but in terms of achievements, you don't achieve much. But if you walk with a collective, you find that you make bigger impact. So I really would like to encourage as many of our women as possible to know that wherever they are, there's a strength they have as women of being able to connect and work together in partnerships. And they don't have, you know, social networks don't always have to be huge and unmanageable. It could be a group of women concerned about early child development, saying now the studies are showing that if you don't invest in early child development, by the time they get to school, it might be too late. So it might be women who are concerned about health. It might be women who are concerned about poverty. It could be women who are concerned about women in politics. You know, you need those networks and to process issues. And whenever there's an opportunity for social action, today we have social media and mobile penetration. They say it's above 200%, each and every person or two in a camp will have a mobile phone. So to use those technologies to process whatever issue that is of importance, knowing that now almost all our countries are part of UN Women. We're part of a bigger global village. If, you know, when your show is showing, women in the camps can now be connected. They can tweet, they can send messages. We all get all sorts of messages from people from all over. So there's hope today. The world is better connected. And once they are connected, they process their issue. It's possible to learn from other women in terms of how they did it, how what worked and what didn't work, so that they don't waste too much time and experimenting with things which are doable and have been done in other instances. And so really it's just to encourage people to say there are endless possibilities. They just need to be connected and to stay on course. Don't move your eye from a goal and stick to your goal and make sure that you walk together and make and identify bottlenecks and obstacles, engage, communicate. It might take long, but definitely it's possible.
Well, thank you for sharing your message of unity for women to be united and to utilize the power and the strength of numbers by connecting with one another for specific causes or for wider causes. And as you say, in today's world, we live in a global village.
Yeah.
Thank you very much for joining us today. It's been wonderful to have you here, and we look forward to hearing about more developments in the department as they come about.
Yeah, thank you very much for having me. That was really special.
You have been listening to Womanity, Woman in Unity on Channel Africa, the voice of the African Renaissance. And we have been talking to the Deputy Minister of Telecommunications and Postal Services, Professor Shilingiwe Mkhize.